National Corporation of America presents The Magic Key. Universal Radio Service of the Radio Corporation of America, the magic key of RCA turns to Miami Beach, Montreal, and New York City to bring you an hour of worldwide entertainment featuring Dusalina Giannini, American soprano who made her debut this week with the Metropolitan Opera Company, Arman Tokatian, the distinguished tenor, those two Ozark philosophers, Lum and Abner, on a visit to New York, John B. Kennedy in a special international winter sports feature, and Frank Black and the NBC Symphony Orchestra playing first Berlioz's brilliant Hungarian march from The Damnation of Faust.
In the ancient city of Alexander the Great, Alexandria, Egypt, some years ago, a handsome young boy of 16 became a well-known figure singing in the cafes and restaurants. The melodies he sang were French, Italian, English, and his native Armenian. But he gave to them all a romantic, glamorous touch, a mysterious lyric beauty which enchanted those who heard him. So successful did he become that he soon was able to continue his vocal studies with outstanding teachers in France and Italy. 3 years later, still only 22, he was on his way to America, a contract with the Metropolitan Opera Company tucked away in his trunk. Such was the early career of Arman Tokatyan, whose life reads like a romantic novel and who looks like the hero of one. Since his debut at the Metropolitan, Mr. Tokatyan has appeared with most of the great opera companies of the world, receiving universal acclaim. The magic key of RCA turns to Arman Tokatyan, singing the moving aria O Paradiso from L'Africana by Meyerbeer. Do you prefer white sand or white snow? The breathless downward rush of the toboggan slide on the equal exhilaration of aquaplaning in sun-worn seas? Would you rather skate than swim, play tennis and golf than go sleigh riding and ski? In our radio travelogue, you take your choice as we visit the scene of winter sports, both southern and northern, tropic and arctic. First to Montreal, where John B. Kennedy, noted NBC commentator, is waiting to report activities in this internationally famous sports center. The magic key of RCA turns to John B. Kennedy.
Good afternoon, all. If they give me any more snow adventures in the magic key of RCA, I'm going to bust into some radio amateur show as an Eskimo. Here we are on Mount Royal, which gives Montreal its name, looking over the beautiful Côte de Neige, the Hill of Snow. Canada's metropolis sprawls its turrets and spires a mile below. In the background, the ice-locked bosom of the lordly St. Lawrence River winds its way 1,000 miles to the sea, through the white-gowned habitant country of Quebec province. Thousands of men, women, and children are skiing, snowshoeing, snowballing, sleigh riding in this capital of winter sport. We're at the Great Park Slide Club Toboggan Run, nearly a mile long, one of the longest and fastest in the world, with four lanes between walls of ice to take you the quickest way of getting you anywhere in less time without a motor, unless you step outside a speeding airplane without a parachute. They are lined up for the takeoff on the top gallery of the slide, with Herbie Hewitson, well-known Canadian announcer, ready for the ride. Take it away at the top, Herbie. They're swaying and swerving down here. The last length of the straightaway runway. Haven't been for election since this is Sunday. Here comes another load. Each load gets out of the way of the next very pronto. For if they don't, they leak standing up for a month. Because the ice here is just frozen concrete. How was it, Herbie?
Swell! Gosh, it was grand.
It was glorious.
What was your time?
About 27 seconds.
Well, that's about 80 miles an hour. You stopped almost before you started. Just about as speedy a ride as the chap with too much aboard who climbed through an open door of a cab and fell out the other side where the door was also open. He got up, paid the driver, and said, gee, we made that one quick.
Not bad.
Hundreds of cheery tobogganers, their faces glowing with exhilaration in this healthy sport that makes the swift wind burn their cheeks. They're gluttons for pleasure. But there's a touch of pain about it. The labor of hauling the toboggan back to the top of the steep hill to check your breath for another breathtaking flight over the snowy hill and far away. Listen.
Okay, I'm monté là.
What's your name, little girl?
Esme.
And what's the trouble?
Our Jules won't pull up his share of load up the hill.
How about that, Jules?
I do, she does.
Yes, I do.
Well, now, no scrapping.
Well, he goes up too slow and we trip.
I thought on go boom.
Well, here's a fresh load coming, clippity-clip. Listen to the rattle of the runners. Here they go. Wait a minute, what's gone? What's gone wrong there? Here they come. The barrier held them a bit. Well, it's royal sport on a royal mountain, and as a New Yorker, I envy them all. For on the sidewalks of New York, the upright citizens have a very tough job remaining upright.
Well, why don't you take a ride, Mr. Kennedy?
Well, I will, my dear, in a wheelchair. The magic key of RCA returns you to New York.
We are back in Radio City, headquarters of the family of RCA, whose members, RCA Communications, Radio Marine, RCA Radiotron, RCA Victor, the RCA Institutes, and the National Broadcasting Company, all unite in presenting these weekly broadcasts for the interest and entertainment of families everywhere.
How about the other side of the winter sports picture? Sun-warmed beaches, graceful palm trees silhouetted against the blue sky. Let us take you next to Miami Beach, Mecca of sun worshippers, and see what the Southland has to offer in the way of sports. The magic key of RCA turns to Miami Beach, Florida.
Good afternoon. We're gathered today beneath tropical skies in the beautiful palm gardens of the Flamingo Hotel in Miami Beach. Right here in the center of the gardens is one of the finest swimming pools in the country. Perhaps you can hear the splashing of the water as the swimmers course through the pool, because we're speaking to you right from the pool's edge. In the pool at this very moment, one of the greatest swimming stars of our time is attempting to better his own world record for the half-mile freestyle swim. He's Ralph Flanagan, national mile and half-mile champion and world record holder for the latter distance. Just over here at the side, at the edge of the pool, I can see Steve Forsythe, Flanagan's coach and his mentor. He's talking with another well-known coach, Willis Cooling. Cooling is the coach of Miami Beach National Championship girls' team. I'm going to try to get... Steve. Would you come over here a minute? How is Flanagan showing up so far in this race?
He's going along pretty fair. He just passed his quarter of a mile and 4:58, which is very good. And I think he's going to get his record all right. He's going along very nice and smooth and doesn't seem to be exerting himself. And I think when called upon, he'll come through very fine.
Is he swimming pretty loose or... How is the water today? Is it?
Why, the temperature of the water is very, very good for the swim, being about 71 degrees. And the air being nice and warm, everything is very favorable for it. And if he doesn't tighten up here on the finish, I think it's going to come out very, very fine. He has a particular style of swimming that differs from any other swimmer in the world, in that... When he's going at his maximum speed, there's no visibility of effort on his part whatsoever. It's quite deceiving to many of the best brains in swimming in the country to see this boy airing out, going as fast as he can possibly swim, and yet with the ease of a practiced swim. A marvelous thing for a swimmer to do. It's so synchronized that the stroke... is near perfect as it's possible. In my humble opinion, that is in technique to have it timed.
Well, I can say it certainly is a beautiful stroke. I can see looks of admiration on the faces of everybody assembled here. That's the 30-second lap there, isn't it?
That was the 30-second lap.
And how's his time on that lap?
And the 30-second lap was just a moment, and I'll let you see what that is.
All right, thanks very much. The music you're listening to is that of Paul Sabin's Town Casino Orchestra. They're playing for a gay crowd of winter vacationists and swimming fans assembled here today. There's a great deal of interest in this meet, for it's possible that some world records will be better this afternoon. And now I see in the crowd Steve Hannigan, a man who, for the past 16 years, has been prominently associated with the city of Miami Beach. He was one of the outstanding figures in its growth. And I'm going to ask him to point out some of the prominent personalities in the crowd this afternoon. Here's Mr. Hannigan.
Well, there are an awful lot of them around here this afternoon, but I see Phil Wrigley over in the corner. You know, he's the man who staged the Catalina swim. He always has an interest in swimming. And then there's Gar Wood. Of course, he does his speeding in a boat. And then there's George Ade, the Hoosier author, who just celebrated his 70th birthday and who learned his swimming in the Wabash River way back in Indiana. Yeah, there's John Golden over there. You know, the famous producer of Clean American Plays. He's here to see the world premiere tomorrow night of the new color picture, The Trail of the Lonesome Pine. And with Golden is, that's Ray Hubbell. Oh, yes, the famous songwriter. You know, together they wrote Poor Butterfly, a song that never will die. Well, yep, there's Bill Clem, too, the baseball umpire. I guess he's here to call the strokes and not the strikes, fair or foul today. Say, John...
Thank you very much. Here's the last lap of the race, isn't it? I believe we're on the last lap of the race here by the applause of the crowd. The crowd is applauding to spur on Flanagan for this last lap. I see his coach, Steve Forsythe, called off the count and is walking down the pool as he's finishing. I believe this is the finish right here. Just a moment, we'll see if that was the last lap. What lap was that, Steve?
Why, I believe that he has about 80 yards more to go.
Oh, he has 80 yards, I see. I was mistaken there. I heard that, the applause of the crowd, and thought that you were finishing up that race. In the view of the fact that we have a little more time here, I'm just going to ask Mr. Hannigan here to go right ahead. I was sorry to interrupt you there.
Well, let's not make this confusing. Now, this is Hannigan, not Flanagan. I couldn't swim across that pool. Say, John Golden, let's bring him over here a minute. John, how do you like it down here?
Well, I came down just to see a picture, but I'm going to stay. All I've got to say is that anybody who gets here, or who has the price to get here, is a fool if he don't start right away for Miami Beach. Hello, Nell.
Say, and there's Gar Wood. Gar, would you rather swim or drive a boat in water?
After seeing Mr. Flanagan in his attempt to break the world's record in swimming, I'd much prefer to make records on Indian Creek with Miss America.
Yeah, there's Willie Klein, the famous Lagoure's professional, too. Would you say a word, Willie?
I can say this is a marvelous place to be and a great place to play golf and swimming.
Thank you very much. And now you've just heard Steve Hannigan. Is this the finish of the half mile now? Just a moment here. We'll have the times on this half mile. It's just been finished. I'm going to ask Steve Forsythe. I see him checking his watch over there. Do you have the times yet?
Yes, we have the official time on that. The swim was made, and 10 minutes and 10 seconds.
Can you give me the world's record on that same link?
Well, Ralph holds the world record made in Detroit last summer at the Outdoor National Championships of 10 minutes and 7 seconds. This is a very commendable performance in view of the fact that Ralph just recently started training for the 1936 Olympic Games, and it was very, very commendable, and I'm exceedingly well pleased with the performance today.
Well, that would indicate that Ralph's in great shape for the coming Olympics, wouldn't it?
Yes, that's a very, very fine indication, for although he tightened up just a little bit, he's looking very, very fine and never at once really exerted himself.
Well, that's great. Say, what's the next... on the program. What's the next race on the program, Steve?
The next event we have on the program is a world record attempt by Catherine Rawls, holder of all world records in this style of swimming for the 300-yard medley swim.
Who's she swimming with?
She's swimming with June Burr, a little girl who is a very fine friend of Catherine's and who has been consistent runner-up to Catherine in all of our national championships.
I see. I understand that Catherine is coached by Willis Cooling, isn't he? Willis, would you tell us something about the records Catherine holds?
Catherine holds about 23 American records, including all world records for medley swimming. And this medley swim is one of the greatest tests of all-around swimming. It'll be 100 yards breaststroke, 100 yards backstroke, and 100 yards freestyle.
Which is Catherine's best stroke? There's the gun.
She's our best American breaststroker. She holds practically all American records for the breaststroke swim.
I see. There's the gun, and they got off to a good start. I believe that Catherine had a little of the advantage at the plunge there, but now they're surging forward in the first section of the medley. That's the breaststroke, as you just heard Willis Cooling tell you. And now, can you tell us something about your pupils and their prospects for the coming Olympics while this race is in progress?
Well, the outstanding swimmer we have here in the girls, of course, is Catherine Rawls. Miss June Burr also has an excellent chance to make the Olympic team.
Miss Burr is your pupil, is she, Mr. Forsythe?
Yes, I've been coaching June for a number of years.
What's her record been? I don't believe her name is quite as prominent in the swimming world.
Those who play second and third in our national championships don't become very well known until they crash through and win an event. June has been in competition for a number of years, but never has had quite that little zip to win that national championship, and therefore she's not near as well known, although in competitive point of view, she's had as much experience, perhaps, as Catherine has.
I see. How's the race progressing now? Let me see. Who is in the lead there? I can't quite see over the shoulders of the crowd.
Catherine's in the lead now.
Catherine's in the lead. Just about a yard, isn't it? Catherine's in the lead of the yard, and how many yards of the breaststroke have they swum so far?
They're on the backstroke now.
Just starting the backstroke, aren't they?
Starting the backstroke, yeah.
Catherine still is leading.
They just finished that breaststroke in 1 minute and 23 and 2/5 seconds, which is very, very fine time for the first 100 yards of a medley swim.
What is the time for the breaststroke for June Burr? Did you have that time there?
No, I didn't get it.
You didn't get her time.
June's time was very, very close, and this is being a grueling battle here. Catherine Rawls at the present time is out front by about a yard. They're on the third length of the backstroke now, and Catherine seems at the present time to be pulling just a little bit further away from her opponent, June Burr.
They're coming down the length of the pool now.
Catherine Rawls, as you know, is one of the outstanding female swimmers of the world. And all styles of swimming as well as diving. The most versatile girl in the world, beyond a question of doubt.
What would you say is her best stroke?
Why, the crawl, in all probability, could be said to be her best stroke, although she does hold about 20 American records in breaststroke swimming. ladies and gentlemen, the swim is being being run very fast by Catherine Rawls. They've just turned over to the freestyle, and at the end of the 200 yards, it was 2:45. June Burr seems to have picked up just a little bit in that, although Catherine now has a commanding lead of about 3 yards in this race.
There you just heard, it looks like a new world record. Perhaps you heard Willis Cooling calling that. Exciting news, you can hear the crowd getting more excited all the time as Catherine Rawls comes fairly tearing down the course now. She's tearing down the pool.
We have one more lap to go now on the finish, and Catherine is suddenly pulling out in front. It looks beyond the question of doubt. It's going to be one of the greatest world records ever made.
Well, this has been an exciting afternoon. Listen to the cheering of that crowd. Burr is very close behind. Although one of the greatest world's records is about to be made, nevertheless, this girl is a real runner-up. Do you have the times there?
3:59 and 4:5. The fastest ever. 4:83 is the world record.
Well, would you repeat that, please, Mr. Cooley?
The new world record of 3 minutes, 59 and 3/5. The fastest a swim has ever made before was 4:08 3/5, which was made by Catherine Rawls in Nashville, Tennessee, about 2 years ago, breaking 8 4/5 seconds off the world's record.
Well, that was the finish, and a great race it was, too. And so, this swimming meet, with all these outstanding young athletes performing so beautifully, continues here in the pool of the Flamingo Gardens in Miami Beach, Florida. But now we must leave this scene of tropical warmth and color, for the magic key of RCA turns, speeding you northward once more to New York.
Miami Beach or Montreal. In a flash, you're there. In a flash, you're back again. And through the Universal Radio Service of the Radio Corporation of America, this feat can readily be duplicated for 1,000 different places. Out of the radio engineering and operating experience gained in rendering international communications and broadcasting service, RCA engineers designed the famous RCA Victor Magic Brain, Magic Eye, RCA Metal Tube radios. The unprecedented public demand for these instruments has made possible the introduction recently of a new line at considerably lower prices. You can now buy a full-size RCA Victor console complete with Magic Brain, Magic Eye, and RCA Metal Tubes for $89.95 FOB Camden, New Jersey. This is only one example of the ways in which members of the family of RCA combine knowledge, skill, and worldwide experience to make available to you at all times all the advantages of Universal Radio Service. The Magic Key, unlocking a world of entertainment, presented for your pleasure and interest by members of the family of RCA, co-workers in the creation of Universal Radio Service. Continuing our program, Frank Black, director of music for the National Broadcasting Company, conducts the NBC Symphony Orchestra in At Rest, that graphic oriental picturization of a caravan from Turkish Fragments by Ippolito Fivano.
Thank you.
To epitomize an entire people in one character or group of characters has always been the ambition of great writers, great artists, great actors. Two young men from the Ozark Mountains in Arkansas, they're known to radio listeners everywhere as Lum and Abner, have been able to do just that. Their characterizations of typical Ozark Mountain philosophers heard nightly on an NBC network are so good that they have never received so much as one letter of protest from their native state, and that's a real record. But perhaps we're wrong in calling Lum and Abner characterizations. Perhaps Lum and Abner really are Lum and Abner, though they were christened Chester H. Locke and Norris Gott. At any rate, they're in the studio here in Radio City today, two distinguished Ozarkers on a visit to New York. Let's see what they have to say for themselves. The Magic Key of RCA turns to Lum and Abner, appearing by arrangement with the Horlicks Malted Milk Corporation. As we look in on the old fellow today, we find Lum and Abner in the lobby of a prominent New York hotel.
Granny, that's what I like about New York. You're always running into so many celebrates.
Always running into what?
Celebrates. Important people. Didn't you see me standing there talking to that fella just now?
Yeah, who was that, Lum?
Didn't you know who that was?
No, I reckon not.
That was Jack Dempsey, the prize fighter.
Well, he sure never favored himself. I saw pictures of Jack Dempsey, Lum. He always wears them little short pants and a pair of boxing gloves.
Well, he wouldn't be wearing them in a hotel lobby this way, for goodness sake.
It looked like him and you was fixing to square off there once or twice, Lum. What was you all arguing about?
Oh, we wasn't arguing. I was just showing him a few pointers about prize boxing. That's what I was doing.
Showing him what?
Showing him a few pointers. See, we've got a lot in commons together with one another, him and me has. We both used to be great box fighters, you know. I was just telling him how I done it.
Tell him how... Well, I never knowed you ever done any prize boxing.
Never done any. I was a champion.
Champion of what?
Why, the champion of, just a champion. Used to always call me Dynamite Edwards.
Well, that's the first time I ever heard of that.
Oh, my. Whooped everything in my part of the country there. They couldn't have a picnic or a gathering of no kind without me fighting with somebody. Used to see signs tacked up on the barns and trees all over that part of the country. Dynamite Edwards, B.S. Bates' sawmill crew, and Dynamite
you
Edwards, B.S.
You mean you fit a whole sawmill crew by yourself?
Oh, my, yes. They couldn't get no one man to fight me.
Well,
I had to fight a whole organization at a time. Like the truck drivers union and the roundhouse crew from the county seat and lodges. And...
Well, I do know.
I recollect one time I was to fight the Elks Lodge over to picnic at Cherry Hill.
You mean you fit a whole lodge by yourself?
Well, I supposed to, but there weren't but 17 of the members there. Two of them never showed up, and they never wanted to fight me unless they had their full strength, so we just called the game off, or they called the fight off.
Well, for the land, say. Well, I'm surprised you never had mentioned all this before, Lum.
Yeah, well, most fellers would, I reckon, but I don't know. I just never was much of a hand to go around making brags about my own doings. Modesty is the best policy, I've always said that. Just sort of hid my light under a bushel and figured the rat traps would beat a trail to my door. No.
Huh?
Nothing.
Well, did you ever get whooped?
Well, yes and no.
Which?
Well, I reckon I'd have to say yes. Once. I whooped myself.
Whooped yourself?
Yeah, I was supposed to fight. I was supposed to fight the coal miners union from Smoky Valley, and they got over there and seen me and backed out, natural. Wouldn't fight me unless I tied my right arm behind me. Had to fight the whole outfit with one hand.
Why, the big fraidy cats.
Well, it was all right. It was my own fault I got whooped. We got to fighting there, and... I seen about a half a dozen of them huddled over in one corner, and I rushed over there and to take a swing at them, you know. Forgot my right arm was tied to me, and hauled off and swung so hard I swung myself clean out of the ring. And they counted 10 right quick before I could get back in the ring, and natural, I lost.
Well, for the land's sakes, why, it's a wonder you never killed yourself, Lum.
Well, I would have hurt myself, I reckon, but I hit my head again the ring post as I sailed out and sort of broke my fall.
Yeah. Well, sir, that's something I've always wanted to do and never could, be a prize boxer.
Well, I don't know. I reckon it just sort of comes natural for fellers like me and Jack Dempsey. You never done no fighting, huh?
No, I never could whip nothing.
Feller your size would make a good paperweight, or featherweight. I reckon you'd be in a feather to fort, man.
Yeah.
No, Sir Abner, I believe I could take you and make a champion out of you. Wished I had some of them big boxing mittens. I'd love to give you a lesson right
well,
here.
Well, I wouldn't want to fight with you, Lon.
Oh, well, I wouldn't hit you. When I get to talking about it, I get to itching to fight again. Just like an old fire horse. Yeah.
Well?
Here, put up your dukes there, Abner. I'll show you some of them things I was telling Jack Dempsey just now.
Do what?
Double up your fists there. That's it. No, square around there and lead with your left. Oh, like me, just watch me and then you'll know you're right. Just swing at my chin here.
Well, I wouldn't want to hit you on a chin with my bar fist, Lon.
Don't you worry about ever hitting me. Dynamite hitters. Come on, go ahead and swing. I'll show you the art of self-offense.
You mean for me to start fighting?
Why, sure. Hit me if you can find an opening.
Wait a minute. What you doing that for, Lon?
What?
Snorting that away.
Oh, that's just natural for us boxing fellas. See, and that's the way you can always tell a regular fighter when you see him. Come on, you ain't scared of me, are you?
Well, look out now, Lum. I hate to just haul off and hit you when I ain't even mad.
Oh, for goodness sake. Go ahead and swing.
Well, here I come now. Well, I do know. Well, that's fun, ain't it? You lay down that way to keep me from hitting you, huh? Come on, get up, Lum. Let's try it again. Lum, you're going to get your clothes all dirty laying around on the floor that way. Lum, don't go to sleep there on the floor. Lum.
No matter how distinguished his or her former musical career may have been, when a singer makes a debut with the Metropolitan Opera Company, it's a real test. On Wednesday of this past week, before a highly critical audience, Dulcelina Giannini, Philadelphia-born American soprano, stepped for the first time before the footlights of the Metropolitan Opera House. With the sureness born of perfect technical training, with a sincerity and feeling that spring from a naturally emotional heart, she sang the title role of Verdi's Aida. Long before the performance was finished, her success was certain. And so Miss Giannini comes before us today with new prestige added to the reputation she had already gained in operatic and concert appearances all over the world. The magic key of RCA turns to Dulcelina Giannini singing the outstanding aria from her Wednesday triumph at the Metropolitan, Aida's tragic Ritorna Vincitor.
Oh,
The magic key of RCA turns to the beautiful voices of Dusalina Giannini and Arman Tokarczyk, blending in duet. For their joint offering, Miss Giannini and Mr. Tokarczyk turn to the score of Pietro Mascagni's opera of Sicilian love, Cavalleria Rusticana, selecting a portion of the passionate duet between Santuzza and Turiddu.
Dio! piede di armi.
From the vocal artistry of Dusalina Giannini and Armand Tocatian, the magic key of RCA turns to Frank Black conducting the NBC Symphony Orchestra in the rapid, rhythmic first Spanish dance from the opera La Vida Breve by De Falla. Thank you.
Have you said to yourself recently, I wish we had a new radio set? Well, if you have, now is the time to fulfill that desire. For RCA Victor has just introduced two outstanding full-sized radio consoles incorporating RCA Victor's latest developments, the Magic Brain, Magic Eye, Metal Tubes, and a 12-inch dynamic speaker. The price is only $89.95 FOB Camden, New Jersey. Almost $30 less than you previously had to pay for an RCA Victor instrument with all these features. This remarkable price is made possible by economies effected through the large-scale production needed to fill the public demand. Ask your RCA Victor dealer to demonstrate either model C819 or C820. With one of these fine musical instruments in your home, you can bring the world to your living room. London, Paris, Madrid, Mexico City, Havana, New York, Chicago, these and hundreds of other places are yours at the twist of the dial. Don't be without an RCA Victor another day. See your RCA Victor dealer. Convenient terms can be arranged. We cordially invite you to be with us next Sunday when the magic key will turn again and members of the family of RCA will present Rudy Vallee and his Connecticut Yankees, Gene Raymond, the two piano artists Pauline Gilbert and Hannah Klein, Francio White, John B. Kennedy in a special Mardi Gras feature, and Frank Black conducting the NBC Symphony Orchestra.
Ben Grauer
and Milton Cross speaking for one member of the Broadcasting Company.